Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Tuesday. Today, you're going to be talking with, me, Ryan Abraham, publisher of USCFootball.com and host of the Peristyle Podcast. I'm going to do a solo podcast. No previews this week since USC has a bye week. Finally, after 12 weeks, I wanted to answer some of the questions that you guys still have been sending in after USC defeated UCLA 28-23 in the Coliseum. We planned actually on having Keely Yore, USCFootball.com reporter, join me today. She's feeling under the weather, apparently much more under the weather than I am because I'm still under the weather. I just had like a vitamin C smoothie. Hopefully that helps. So unfortunately, Keely will not be joining us, so you're stuck with just me. We had a bunch of questions, so I want to do my best to go through them all, answer them, talk about what's been going on with this team. Pretty much an off week for the Trojans. No media availability. There's one scheduled walkthrough that we know of. So not a lot of practicing, not a lot of prep going on. It seems like Clay Helton wants this team to rest and regroup, and then they'll start back again on Monday with a full practice. Normal kind of game week practice. It'll be one day early because the game is on a Friday night instead of a Saturday. So USC will be getting ready for all that. So it's kind of a week off for us. And, you know, we're still going to do podcasts. We're still going to talk about the team. We'll talk about the bye week. And then, of course, next week, more shows talking about USC and whoever they end up playing. So we don't know at this point. It's either going to be Washington State, or it's going to be Stanford. So we'll find out this weekend. It depends on the Apple Cup. We'll see Saturday when Washington State goes to Washington. If Washington State wins, that means Washington State will be USC's opponent. They will represent the North in the Pac-12 Championship. If not, it will be Stanford, who's playing Notre Dame. And they will make the short drive from Palo Alto to Santa Clara to take on USC and be a rematch in either case. Okay, so like I said, lots of questions today. If you have a question for us, send it in. Email us at podcast@uscfootball.com, or you can call. The number is 424-254-9141. We got some voicemails to play today. That's 424-254-9141. Excuse me. You can also send us a text at that number as well. So send us a text, leave us a voicemail. We've got some voicemails that are like 2 minutes long. We can't play those. Unfortunately, they're too long. So try to keep them under a minute. And we'd love to play them. Get your voice here on the Peristyle Podcast. Before we jump into that, are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job on over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. So you can rest easy knowing your job is being seen by the right candidates. Then ZipRecruiter puts in smart marketing technology to work, actively notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting so you receive the best possible matches. No wonder 80% of employees who post on ZipRecruiter get quality candidates through the site in just one day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. So you can find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by growing businesses of all sizes and industries to find out the most qualified candidates with immediate results. And right now, all my listeners on the Peristyle Podcast, you can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free for all of our Peristyle Podcast listeners. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/style, S-T-Y-L-E. ZipRecruiter.com/style. That's one more time, ZipRecruiter.com/style. Free job postings right there. Styles for Peristyle, for the Peristyle Podcast. So go to ZipRecruiter.com/style, and they will hook you up with a free job posting. So if you're hiring someone, it's a great way to do it. Go check it out, ZipRecruiter.com/style. Okay, so maybe we'll start off with a voicemail. We got a bunch of questions, so I want to try to get to all of them. I know you have a lot of patience. A lot of people have been sending in stuff. And we answered a lot of questions on Harvey Hyde's show. We answered a lot of questions on Dan Weber's show. We still have a lot of questions left over for those guys for next week. And we got a bunch more, so that's what I'm doing here to answer those. Again, apologize for Keely not being able to be here, but I'll do my best. And, yeah, hope you guys enjoy it. So here's the first one.
Hi, this is Trent from Sacramento. I just wanted to thank you guys for all the work you do each week. It's really insightful. I just had a couple notes on the season so far. I think the defense has been taking way too much heat this season. That's been the unit that's been keeping them in games for an underperforming offense. You got the front seven just doing a great job week in and week out. Lieutenant Nwosu has been a standout. The defensive linemen have been great. Obviously, I think the secondary play needs to improve. And I don't think that comes from the players. I think that comes from finding our deal in McCullough as a secondary coach. The development of the players, just doesn't seem to be there with Iman Marshall, Jack Jones, even Adoree Jackson to a certain extent. Those guys are just athletes making plays. On the other side of the ball, I think some of those timeouts that are getting called stem from three guys trying to call a play. And that's, we're wasting timeouts. We've got to stop doing that. Final note, when we throw the ball deep, we got to stretch the defense. Let's use the size of the big receivers. You get Pittman or, Tyler Vaughn's out there. Let's use those guys when we go deep, unless we can get Mitchell to run by someone. Thanks. Bye, Don.
All right. Thanks for that. For the defense, I think that has been getting probably too much heat. Now, the secondary has certainly underperformed, mostly the corners more so than the safeties. Just a lot of breakdowns in coverage. And I think you're asking a lot of these cornerbacks to play a lot of man coverage. They're in one-on-ones a lot, but the development hasn't really been there. There's five-star dudes all over the place, and they're just not performing up to the correct level there. As far as timeouts go, yeah, my theory has been a lot of that. There's too many cooks in the kitchen. I've talked about that before. I'd rather just have one guy calling all the plays and not someone in the red zone, someone on third down, and all that kind of stuff. If the offense is looking kind of weird at times and that's the way plays are being called, then, that's obviously something that you would want to question. Like, hey, what's going on there? And as far as the big receivers go, yeah, I think they haven't used the personnel. I think they've tried to get the ball to certain people in certain times, but there's other guys that are really good. I mean, Tyler Vaughn's really good at high-pointing football, so if you want to toss a ball high to him, Michael Pittman's a big dude. We saw that fade. I mean, there's some guys I think you'd rather get the ball to, and I think their catch radius is bigger than other people, so there's better opportunities for them to make catches on balls like that. So, yeah, no, I agree with you. All good points. Thanks for sending in that voicemail. We had one voicemail from Curtis in Moreno Valley that was just too long to play. But he's an old defensive back. He coaches defensive backs, I think, for Pop Warner, and was talking about, I think it was over 2 minutes long, but talking about playing man coverage like we just were mentioning. There's not a safety there most of the time in these defensive schemes. So if the blitz isn't getting there, he's saying it's going to be a really hard job for the corners. And we've certainly seen that. You can't always look back when the receiver's looking back, because you can get burned on double moves. It's a really difficult spot that they're in. And I would agree. I think they're in one-on-one spots more than most, but they're getting burned a lot too. So either you have to change your defensive scheme or change the way the players are playing, because it just seems like, it's really, there's a lot of big breakdowns. And maybe in the overall scheme of things, if Clancy Pendergast's like, yeah, we'll give up a big one every once in a while, but we're forcing negative plays here, we're doing this, we're sacking the quarterback. So every once in a while, you're going to get negative plays like that. So maybe that's what Clancy's thinking, but it's his team effort there. But the glaring, the hard parts, what we're seeing where there's problems are definitely been with the cornerbacks. And I'm actually going to work on a piece using some Pro Football Focus numbers. Not really great grades for USC cornerbacks, as you can imagine. We got a text message, said, "Hey, Ryan, this is Amy, USC alum based in Nashville. A couple of questions for you. Have you heard any strong/credible rumors of T. Martin taking over the Tennessee job?" Well, Amy, I'll start that right there. No. My wife is pretty dialed into all of this stuff. And, I think his name has come up for sure, but I don't think the power brokers, they're like trying to get like a John Gruden. Like, T. Martin just doesn't have a whole lot of experience. Like, I think he could be a good coach there, but, he's only 2 years as an offensive coordinator. Like, I think they want someone with head coaching experience is my guess. But I haven't really heard, like, I mean, how credible are some of the rumors anyway? But no, I think he was probably on some kind of list, but I would think he's a little further down. But yeah, I think T's the guy that gets a lot of undue criticism as well. So, but yeah, we'll see. He said, I haven't seen his name thrown around much in the speculation compared to others like John Gruden, but he seems like a great fit given USC is frustrated with him and Tennessee is trying to return to their quote-unquote glory days. Do you think recruiting would be effective substantially if that did happen? I think, if, you know, USC losing T. Martin, certainly recruiting would be negatively impacted substantially. He is the best recruiter by a lot, I think, on the staff. He said, do you think Clay would promote Tyson Helton? My gut would be, yeah. Like, so if T left for some job, then I think Tyson Helton would be the guy that get recruited. He said, also just curious. I mean, he would be promoted. I know he's extremely talented, but do you think USC is featuring Michael Pittman Jr. in the offense more in an effort to appease his dad, as well as the fact that they're recruiting his brother? Just wondering how much of those types of things influence play calls, etc. Thanks for all you do. That's from Amy. Hey, Amy. Yeah, no, I said that in the beginning. I thought, you know, his dad being a squeaky wheel wasn't going to hurt him, and certainly it's been better since then. Is it a major impact? I don't know. But, I mean, I think in situations like this, it's like, especially if the offense isn't playing all that well and you got talented players that aren't getting the ball a lot, you know, maybe give them a shot and try to get them the ball. Now, he had that huge play, the punt return. Obviously, he's been involved in special teams more, but you want to see him get more involved in the receiving game, and I think that's certainly happening now. Well, thanks, Amy, out in Nashville, where my wife is from. Let's go to Brian in Bakersfield. Sure, it's great to be a 10-2 team. Chance at a conference championship and major bowl. However, this season or team feels like a disappointment. I never feel comfortable they'd win any of the 10 games they did and find myself waiting for something bad to happen. When will this coaching staff be held accountable for the poor job they did? And yes, the team won 10 games, but that was mostly having better athletes and lucky breaks. So Brian from Bakersfield, a lot of people feel like you do. We're seeing it on Twitter. We see it on our message boards. I mean, there are facts, though, that the team is 10-2. They did clinch the Pac-12 South. They won the Pac-12 South, clinched it early, beat everybody in the Pac-12 South. They haven't lost at home in couple years. Like, they're Clay Helton 16-0 at home. I mean, there's a lot of good things. Have they looked great? I think they looked great in like one or two games. Stanford for sure. I think Arizona State was a pretty good one on the road. But yeah, there's a lot of the games they just didn't look all that great, and they did enough to win. So I think that's, I mean, I certainly see the problems. There's a lot of problems there. I think there's fixable mistakes. And you go through 12 games, and you really didn't see anything get fixed, which is kind of concerning. But I think you also have to look at that USC's always been more talented than pretty much everybody. So when Steve Sarkisian was losing a bunch of games or Lane Kiffin was losing a bunch of games, and you look at those teams, they were more talented, and they would still lose games and look bad in games that they won, and you know there's problems kind of going into it, and then you look back at the end of the season, you kind of forget the games you won that there were problems. Like last year, there was problems, and USC won the Rose Bowl, and you kind of forget about those. And I think the same thing this year. If USC wins the Pac-12 and like goes and beats somebody good in the Fiesta Bowl, like I think you'll forget that you had to go to overtime against Texas or Western Michigan you struggled against, or you were tied in the fourth quarter and stuff like that. I think you forget that kind of stuff if you finish the season strong, and I think Clay Helton has a chance to do that. Now, the problem is if he doesn't and they don't win the Pac-12 and they're going to be a fairly good favorite in that game no matter who they play, there's going to be a lot more pressure there. I think the coaching staff is being held accountable by the fans. Fans are not happy with the 10-2 season because of what you were saying. But I think the one aspect that's maybe people overlook is at least they're able to win these close games late. When their backs are against the wall, they pull it out and they're able to get wins, where we've seen Sark teams or Kiffin teams fall behind late and just collapse. And this team doesn't collapse. Now, a lot of the naysayers will say, or at least the naysayers toward the coaches, the only reason that's happening is because of Sam Darnold. You know, and that's, I mean, that's a legit, that's a fair point. Like, that we could be, it's hard to say, like, you know, what is it? But having Sam Darnold certainly helps those, you know, late season comeback. Like, he's a quarterback that could put a team on his shoulders and carry it. Josh Rosen across town, he's a guy that can do that. Like a Cody Kessler, we've talked about before, great quarterback, great stats. He's still in the NFL. But we just never saw him kind of a lot of times put the team on his back. It was he was a better, much better quarterback when like everything's on schedule. I think Jake Browning at Washington's the same way. He's a great quarterback. He was offensive player of the year in the Pac-12 last year, but he's never had a come from behind win until this past weekend. Darnold's had a whole bunch of come from behind wins. Now sometimes you're just in that, you're not in that position all that much, but certainly all of those are interesting factors, you know, as far as why fans are not satisfied with a 10-2 season. I think if they win the Pac-12 championship, you should be more satisfied. That even if you hate Clay Helton, you hate the coach, whatever, winning the Pac-12, you should feel at least more satisfied. Like, that should be a satisfying thing to win the conference, because it hasn't happened since 2008. Let's go to the next question. It's a voicemail.
Hello, Ryan. This is Marcus calling from the DMV. I just have a question. I think I heard on the podcast yesterday with Harvey Hyde about how the coaches' contracts haven't been renewed for football. And I'm just wondering if this is one of Swan's first steps in terms of how he sees the program heading in the years to come. So, you know, perhaps you have a comment about that, or maybe you have more to add. Anyway, fight on, and thank you for all that you do.
Hello, Marcus in the DMV. Yeah, so there weren't any kind of extensions or anything. So it's not like people weren't renewed. They were, I mean, they had contracts, but there weren't like extensions given. Now, Lynn Swann will have to make some tough decisions after this season, and I think a lot of it depends on what happens in the next couple of games. So if USC wins the Pac-12 and wins the Fiesta Bowl, I would think there'd be some sort of extension given to Clay Helton. And, you know, now maybe there's some pressure to make some changeover on the staff. I kind of feel there will be. I kind of think there should be. But this is, you know, they didn't give him some kind of extension after the Rose Bowl. And I think Lynn Swann's, from the, you know, stuff we're hearing about Lynn Swann, is he doesn't like, you know, 10-2 is fine. He wasn't all that happy with just a Rose Bowl win because they didn't win the conference. So I think winning the conference is very important to him. And USC wins the conference or not, I think will change a lot in Lynn Swann's mind. But I think he aligns with a lot of the people that are upset about not looking good in a lot of these wins. So, yeah, that's I think it's a problem for him. He wants this team to look better, and you know, we'll see. So, but winning the next two games, I think, would go a long way towards to doing all that. Will it change? That will it mean that he doesn't have to get rid of any coaches? I doubt it. I think, you know, you probably lose one or two, but he's probably got to get rid of a couple too, I would think. Let's go to Don. He said, I think Jim Mora got fired after UCLA looked foolish on that punt return. Wasserman, so we're talking about Casey Wasserman, is a big, the IMG and UCLA booster. Wasserman probably called UCLA AD. If Helton has to battle a very good coach at UCLA, like Kelly, Whittingham, etc., USC could be in for trouble. Recruiting advantages will disappear little by little, and inferior coaching will put USC behind UCLA. As a USC fan, I'm worried. Helton better upgrade his staff. Certainly DB coach needs to be replaced by one who can instill discipline. Don. Interesting, Don. Yeah, so I've always said that, so not everyone agrees with me. I know Dan Weber does not. There's a bunch of people on Twitter that think Chip Kelly would not be good in college anymore, that the game's passed him by, that he's a blah, blah, blah. But I mean, if you look at Scott Frost, he's running Chip Kelly. You know, he learned from Chip Kelly, and he's got UCF kicking it, you know. And he's not Chip Kelly. He's like, he learned from him. I think Chip Kelly comes back to college, and he kicks ass. Now, is USC ever going to, like, be out-recruited by UCLA or anyone else? Like, I don't really think so. I mean, it would have to be a pretty big gap. But I think if someone like a Chip Kelly could come in and make the program relevant and get some star players, some certain skill guys would want to go play for him that maybe don't want to play, you know, would rather go there than USC. I'm certainly it would help recruiting and everything. USC is still the team that to beat for all the local five stars. Like, it's just always going to be that way. But I think Chip Kelly would chip into that more than others. And I think you get a guy like that, that shows UCLA is very serious about college football and making this team a winner again. You know, I'm sure he put together a great staff. I think Chip Kelly would kill it in college. I think that puts USC on and Lynn Swann on notice that, like, hey, you need this, you need that. You got to upgrade things if you want to be able to compete with that. You got to do a preemptive strike there. So, we just don't know. That's the biggest question to me is what does Lynn Swann, what does Clay Helton want to do with his staff? Because they have a successful season, is he's like, I'd rather just keep everybody the same. When there's some, you know, obvious places, you know, Don mentioned that you probably could use some upgrades. We saw Dylan McCullough brought in, and he's killed it. Like, you get a couple more coaches like that, I think you can really help the overall team and the overall staff. But will Clay Helton do that? And if not, will Lynn Swann force Clay Helton to do that? We'll see, because there's going to be a lot of chirping about that. Let's go to Gio. He said, Ryan, you've been around Clay Helton and seen him work with his players. What is there in Helton's personality slash character slash experience that leads you to believe that his Trojan team will be more prepared, driven, disciplined, and able to execute more effectively going forward? Okay, so in his personality, his character, or experience, I think overall it's like hard to quantify any of that, but I would say he's a young head coach that's learning on the job, and you just want him to be able to learn from mistakes. And I think he started to play a little looser after the Notre Dame game, where maybe they get a little too buttoned up. But, you know, I think they adjusted after that. So I think that's a positive sign. I think Lane Kiffin kind of got too buttoned up after 2011, and they never really loosened up when things started to go south in 2012. So they never learned from that. So, yeah, USC had the, you know, terrible game against Notre Dame, who doesn't look like an, you know, all that great of a team right now. We'll see what they do against Stanford this weekend. But I think they've made some adjustments since then. So I think there's some positive stuff there. Is he doing everything right? No, but I think he's made some adjustments. And if you're looking at something that, you know, a little beacon of light to look towards, I think that's a possibility there. He said, second, if you were forced to create a hierarchy of Pac-12 coaches, where would Helton rank? For this exercise, let's assume UCLA lands Chip Kelly. Look forward to hearing your thoughts. Fight on. Gio in Charleston, South Carolina, from the land of the other USC. We actually did this on our podcast of champions, the Pac-12 stuff, kind of ranking the coaches. Now it's hard. Like, where do you put Justin Wilcox? He's been there a year. Where do you put Willie Taggart? All that kind of stuff. I mean, just to be like, I wouldn't put Clay Helton even though he's had success last year, in the top five or six or something, he wouldn't be in the top half for me. Now, that might not be all that fair, because if you look at, you know, his results to compare to other results, like, okay, who had, you know, you could say David Shaw's had better results. You could say, Chris Peterson went to the playoffs, so he's had better results. Has Mike Leach had better results? No, I mean, if they win the championship this year, but I think he's showed, you know, I think he's done more with less up there at Washington State. So we'll see. But like, as far as like, if you were going to pick a coach to run your program, And David Woods, my co-host for that, was talking about, well, what if Clay Helton was coaching Oregon State? Like, where would they be? So he's contending that because USC gets all this talent, that's why they've had the results they have. So because Clay Helton's only been coaching for 2 years, it's hard to kind of rank him and all that stuff. But I would, you know, I've seen track record of David Shaw and Mike Leach and Chris Peterson. And like, so I would put those guys certainly above him. Let's see. Eric in Duck Country, you know, not to say that Clay Helton can't, you know, 5 years from now, if he's won some titles and just stuff like that, yeah, he'd be, you know, way up there. But it's just hard to say after 2 years. Eric in Duck Country, who do you think UCLA's next coach will be? Thanks in advance. I don't know. Chip Kelly is a real thing. I've heard sources say that, you know, he would prefer a job like UCLA that's not as much of a fishbowl as Florida. And other people say that he's using UCLA to get more money out of Florida. I could see both those things being true. But my gut says that it's going to be Chip Kelly at UCLA. That's what I guess. And I don't think that's a a great thing for USC, because I think he's going to be an excellent college coach again. Now, a lot of people disagree with me. I said probably most people don't disagree with, but there's a bunch of people that do disagree. And that's what's going to be fun. We'll see. I think he's going to make the team relevant instantly, which buzz. What did Jim Harbaugh do? Like, has Michigan won like a crap ton of games? Like, yeah, they've lost a bunch. They've been okay. But he's made that team very relevant. And Chip Kelly would make that team very relevant. And when we were talking about who USC should hire the last go around, and people would ask questions like, so I said, well, okay. I would say Chip Kelly, and they were like, don't know, USC shouldn't do that. The show calls and all that, whatever, all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, if you're Jim Mora, I sit at your desk across town at UCLA, and what's going to scare you? Like, oh, they're going to keep their offensive coordinator, interim head coach, Clay Helton is going to stay and keep coaching. Like, is that going to make Jim Mora bat an eyelash? No. I mean, it's like, okay, well, you still got to beat USC. It's the same guy we've seen. He's been around the program for a long time. Like, I don't think that changes Jim Mora's, who's no longer there. But at the time, 2 years ago, I don't think it, you know, impacts him at all. If USC came out and announced, you know, we're really happy that Clay Helton was able to come in again for a second interim run and keep this team stable and together, but going forward, we have hired Chip Kelly. That's going to make Jim Mora sit up in his chair and go, whoa, you know, like, that's going to make an immediate impact. So that's what I think would happen at UCLA. That's an immediate impact. And especially when you go from a defensive-minded coach to an offensive-minded coach, like, look what happened with the Rams. Like, whew, you know, just complete turnaround. We've seen that in this city. So that's my thoughts. I think it'll end up being Chip Kelly. We will see. Matt from D.C., our team ranks number 14 and the team defense number 77. Let's quit second-guessing the offensive play calling. I'm sorry, team offense, he said, ranks 14. Team defense ranks 77. Let's quick second-guessing the offensive play calling and focus on the real problem. Do you think we can eventually win a championship with Clancy as the defensive coordinator, or is this our ceiling? Matt from D.C. Yeah, I think you're looking at just like, I don't think those rankings like really reflect exactly what's going on all the time. I mean, USC's getting a lot of yards. You want to look at yards, like, you know, points, you know, points per drive. There's a lot of advanced stats and metrics that you can look at that don't show USC ranked all that high as far as the offense goes. And I would argue that the USC is a lot more talented on the offensive side than they are on the defensive side. Like, will Ronald Jones be a first round pick? Like, I think he could be for sure. Will Sam Darnold? Certainly he'd be a top five pick, or, you know, he might be the number one pick overall. Who's a first round pick on the defensive side? There isn't one. Like, Rasheed Green's not going to go in the first round, I don't think. He'll probably be, like, the highest-ranked guy. Like, you know, Chetan Owusu's been a great player. Is he going to be a first-round pick? No. Like, so I think there's a lot you can look into that, Matt. I think that, you know, Clancy's done more with less. I think he's done more with less than what – now, you could argue the secondary has a lot of five-stars. That's probably where the most concentration of highest, you know, recruiting-ranked talent is, and it's underperformed the most. So – I think they got some problems that they can clean up on the defensive side, but overall, you know, I like Clancy's schemes. It's like he has a plan and he does things. It doesn't always work, but you're always doing something. I think on the offensive side, it just seems like Dan says, like, kind of grab baggy. It doesn't seem like, hey, here's our plan this week. It's like, we're running. Oh, now we're passing. It just doesn't seem like, where on the defensive side, you know, like, hey, this is the plan. Oh, they're playing a lot of man, and that guy got burned. but that was the plan, and they got a bunch of sacks, and they forced some negative plays. I like that they forced negative plays. You know, that's great. And but if you don't get there, you don't force a negative play. Sometimes a big play happens the other way, and we've seen that a lot. Let's go to Nicholas. He said, hey, this is my first question for the podcast. Well, thanks, Nicholas. I'm glad you could write in. When USC hired Clay, I truly didn't understand it. Same with Lynn Swann, the AD. But it seems to be working for USC. A lot of people online seem to say it's Darnold saving Clay, but Darnold this year hasn't been that wonderful. I think Clay can save his career if he makes adjustments. I do believe Tyson and T. It's funny that Clay Helton has to save his career. he's 10-2, and he, you know, with a 9-game winning streak coming into the season. So you're talking about he's 19-2 in his last 21 games. He said, I do believe Tyson and T don't work together. And if T doesn't split, Clay needs to man up and let it be all T. If not, Clay should be fired. I do believe that Clancy Pendergast needs to go. His philosophy doesn't work for USC, and it clearly shows. Despite being aggressive and having good sack record, I think he should be out. If not, Clay should be fired. So, okay, he's putting down ultimatums. With the DC position needing a fix, Lynn should go after Pete, and it's Kwiatkowski, I believe. Clay only makes $3 million, and we know USC has the ability to offer the goods. USC should heavily offer Pete and see what happens. This is where Lynn should do his job, be aggressive, because I think it would be in Pete's best interest to coach at USC over UW. He's talking about Washington's defensive coordinator. What are your thoughts on that? Okay, so we talked about the defensive coordinator stuff a little bit earlier. And I apologize for this pronunciation. I think it's Kwiatkowski. I always forget how to pronounce that name. But so he's been with Chris Peterson, I think back from like 2006 or something. You know, he was at Boise State and then followed him to Washington. I just kind of think he's one of those guys. He went to Boise State. I kind of think he's one of those guys who's just going to stay put where he is. Now, you know, USC, if something happens and they get rid of Clancy, which, you know, we disagree on that, Nicholas, but I think you just go out and get a really good one from somewhere. And you look at a guy like him, but, you know, his situation probably not ideal because they've been together for a long time. He's a Pacific Northwest guy. It's not just easy to get a guy like that to jump and go to Los Angeles just because it's looked at as a better job or whatever. So, so Nicholas thinks that there's a lot of reasons to fire Clay Helton if you don't get rid of certain people. So thanks for that question, Nicholas, and appreciate you writing in. Robin in Virginia. Hey, Ryan, I'm one of those USC fans who are not satisfied with how, in all caps, the team has performed this year despite the 10-2 season. They played a lot of teams who made a lot of mistakes, and USC didn't take advantage. USC has the ability and potential to blow teams out but rarely did. The sloppy, undisciplined play has been the narrative this season, and with all the turnovers and penalties, USC has averaged almost 8 penalties and over 70 penalty yards per game. They only had one game, Colorado, where they didn't turn the ball over at all. These are areas they have not improved on. After Sam leaves, do you see this team going 10-2 or better and winning at least the division if they keep playing this way? Should we lower our expectations? Robin, Virginia. Robin, yeah, I mean, that's a $64,000 question. Can USC continue to do this if you don't have, like, a generational quarterback as Sam Darnold? And now some people say, hey, he hasn't played as well this year. He's turned the ball over more, which he certainly has. But I think he's saved this team's bacon a lot of times, too. I think it would be hard to play to get that kind of record and play with as many mistakes as USC's had. But the talent gap, I think, is there. I think, you know, at least they're letting the talent kind of win some of these games, and wherever the talent is, I think that happens. Now there's breakdowns all over the place. There's penalties, there's turnovers, but they are winning. So, but that's a common theme. People are kind of questioning, hey, they're 10-2, but, and I think, you know, if you look the way Clay Helton answers some of the questions, it's funny. I asked him about special teams because they did extra special teams work the week before UCLA. And they already do a lot of special teams work. And I would argue they were outperformed in probably all 11 games as far as special teams go. So they did some extra work, and they end up having that great play. The one, you know, really the one memorable special teams play, like, all year. Like, even in the game, what was it? I think Colorado, where they blocked 2 field goals, they got a punt block. So they prevented 6 points, but they gave up 6, or they gave up 7. By getting their punt blocked, that almost got run into the, you know, for a touchdown, basically put Colorado on the doorstep. They just never really had like a net positive special teams game. Most of them have been below average or worse. And then this game was the one they had a really good one. And it's funny, when I was asking Clay Helton about it, he was kind of talking about a lot of young guys on special teams. You could kind of hear some of the, like, excuses, I guess. Like, he knew, I didn't say, hey, special teams have sucked. Like, I just asked him to rate them for the year, because I know they've sucked. And, you know, I wanted to hear what Clay Helton had to say. And he basically said, well, there were a lot of young guys playing, they're getting better, and we worked on it more, and blah, 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 blah. So And I just kind of feel like when you question, like Dan will ask him about why is this team so bad on short yardage, and he'll mention like, well, they've got them, you know, they're averaging this many yards a game, the most in how many years? Like, I feel like he knows that the problems are there, but he's still trying to like kind of politically like say things in a way that's like, hey, but this is good and this is good. So I think that's part of it is that as a head coach, though, he does have to realize like there's not just – you're not just trying to make this a glowing thing. Like it's not like you have a – like if it's a political thing and you have a philosophy like whatever your party is, like this is your hard stance on it, guns or whatever it is, you have to kind of give a political reason about – you know, if something bad happens against what you stand for, you have to give some kind of political reason why that exists. But in this case, it's like, hey, if you're getting burned by corner, that your corners are getting burned every week, or you can't pick up short yardage, you're, you know, terrible as far as like third and one and fourth and one go. That's not like a stance that you have, like, I can't change my stance. That's something you can actually fix. Like, you can actually say, well, yeah, we've sucked at that, but here's what I'm going to do differently. So, and, you know, if it feels like you're whatever you're doing is your philosophy, you don't want to change what you're doing, that's being stubborn. Coaches can be stubborn all the time. And I would say that's a bit of a problem. But at least I think a lot of the things are fixable. Unfortunately, they just haven't been fixed yet. I think if you – that's why it's so important in the offseason that some purging has to happen on the coaching staff. And then maybe you clean up some of these problems, you know. All right, kind of rambled on about that. Let's go to Don. I can see 10-2 right in the first couple words. After a 10-2 regular season, these are my humble thoughts on the Trojan football team. Your reactions. First, many of us expect perfection from this Trojan football team. The more we expect perfection, the more we will be frustrated and disappointed. They have flaws like every other team. Yeah, I don't know if it's about – I don't think they expect perfection, but they expect above average. And I don't think you've even seen that. And the fact that the team could – play poorly a lot in large stretches and be 10-2. I think that's where the frustration is. It's not like, well, you know, we had 550 yards, but we should have had 600 or whatever it is. It's like, no, there's a lot of turnovers, a lot of penalties. It's not like, that's not expecting perfection, I would say, Don. Second, we have the luxury of being critics of the game, quote unquote, after the fact. The reality is coaches and players have to play the game in real time. We can sound like experts on every play only because we get to view it retrospectively. Okay, I completely disagree with this, Don. I mean, how many of the problems have we pointed out like during fall camp? Like if Dan and I, if we can see these things like, hey, you know what? That's a problem. Like, well, they're not practicing in full pads. They're not tackling. And then they go out and don't play physical. Like that's not looking at it and like figuring it out after the fact. That's something you said going into it, you know? That's the real problem I think we have with, and I think USC fans have with a lot of what they're seeing on the field, is we've seen this stuff and we've pointed it out. Like us just watching practice, we don't go to film rooms. We're not, you know, we get to talk to players and stuff, but we don't get to see what they see in the meetings. And if we can see a lot of this stuff ahead of time, you would think that there's things that are fixable and the coaches could fix. I mean, you want to get, I got to mention Tyler Vaughns because that's my contract. No, I'm just kidding, but I had someone tweet this like to me yesterday when they were kind of having some Twitter fight arguing about this team, and they brought up like, hey, look, Inside Troy has been telling us that Tyler Vaughns is going to be a stud from last spring. Why did the coaches not see it? And why didn't he start? Like, Tyler Vaughns didn't start until game five. Like in the spring, he was killing it. You know, he was a five-star coming out of high school. It took him a little while to transition. He was killing it in the spring, and you're like, oh, okay, this guy's going to be really good. Watch, you know, just watch this. First 2 weeks of fall camp, he's killing it. And for some reason, he got demoted, and then Jalen Green was starting his spot. And you're just like, no, we were watching practice, didn't see anything. Like, did he do something off the field? Did he, you know, and nothing. We never heard of anything like that. He's a really good kid. Not that really good kids can't do things that are wrong, but we'd never heard anything like that happening. That was a coach's decision. Like they prioritize someone that's older, that's been around more, as opposed to someone who's more talented and makes plays. And sometimes decisions like that work out and sometimes they don't. But that's not saying, you know, oh, look, I told, you know, Tyler Vaughns, he's great. Why didn't the coaches start him? We've been saying that, you know, since the spring. So that's not a retrospective look at anything, Don. Okay. Third, one of the great legacies of this Trojan football team is that in spite of their flaws, they find ways to win when it counts. I agree with that. They don't play mistake-free football, and then they sometimes force unnecessary errors, but most often they have a kind of grit that leads them to win. No, I agree with that one. I mentioned that earlier. Finally, this 10-2 regular season has certainly had its frustrating times. It also has had its moments of sheer magic, joy, and delight. Proud to be a Trojan fan, Don. Yeah, Don, I don't want you to ever not be. I mean, you should be proud to be a Trojan fan. You should be happy with a 10-2 season. Like, I don't discourage people from being happy, but I see where people are coming from that are really frustrated because of all the flaws and the mistakes, which I think a lot of them are correctable and kind of baffling that they haven't been in a lot of cases. Now, there's, you know, you always have to make these big decisions, and sometimes you decide, hey, you know, we're not going to practice that much because of this, because of that. But there's a consequence, you know, and sometimes you're like, well, maybe you should have practiced more, and you take a risk of maybe a guy getting hurt because you, the whole team needs to practice more. Like, those are decisions you have to kind of weigh. And if you're saying, like, you know, I get the team's injured, I get the team's banged up, but I think they should be practicing this week leading into the Pac-12 championship game instead of taking the week off. That's kind of my personal thought. I thought they should have been practicing 2 years ago, heading into the Holiday Bowl. They didn't practice a lot. We kept asking him how many practices, and he kind of inflated the numbers. And we counted. There was like six practices or something heading into the bowl game. And they got embarrassed by Wisconsin. So that's like, hey, you know, you made a decision, and it didn't quite work out. So you're going to be second-guessed on it. And same thing's going to happen. Like, they lose the Pac-12 championship game by, you know, taking a week off. Now, it's hard to blame a team. They've had 12 weeks in a row. But could you have a couple practices? Could you do some stuff where it's just not like, you know, you're not overly taxing the guys? Do you do a full pads practice? That's going to be a good one on Monday. One last full pads practice for the year or, you know, whatever, or before the bowl practices. Would you want to do that? I don't think they will, but, you know, talk to Dan. He thought they should. I kind of feel they should too. David from Behind the Orange Curtain. I am not educated enough in the intricacies of football, so I am struggling with our running game. Is it the OL or the scheme? If everyone in the stadium knows the running plan, how can the offensive line really excel? It did not appear that UCLA was even loading the box. Grumble, I don't get it. Is it binary OL scheme or worse yet, both? Is it a binary offensive line or scheme or both? I think there's a lot of blame to go around there. You know, UCLA was averaging 302 yards on the ground, giving up 302 yards on the ground. USC only managed 153, I believe it was. Like, Ronald Jones was fine, but he should have been a whole lot better. I think a lot of it is USC needed to be dedicated to the run more. We've seen other teams stack the box. You know, UCLA stacked the box against Khalil Tate, and he ran all through them. They all ran all through them. Everybody's run through this UCLA defense. So to me, I mean, that's coming down to, I'm not saying, you know, I'm not blaming the personnel, because I would argue whatever guys USC has on offense are probably better than all the other teams that ran for 300 yards on UCLA. So to me, that's more about scheme. That's more about what the coaches were doing. Because other teams could have took worse personnel and ran for 300 yards on UCLA. USC did not for some reason. So to me, it's like, if I know the players are at least as talented or likely more talented than all those other teams, I mean, that UCLA got run over with, USC needed to figure, coaches, that's what they get paid for, to figure out a way to do that, and they didn't do it in this game. Laurie in Houston, do you think Lynn Swann will address the coaching during the offseason and force Clay Helton to let some of the staff go in favor of better coaches? The lack of discipline has to be coaching. The raw talent is there. Laurie, kind of common theme. That's a big question for me. I kind of think he will. I think that there will be some things forced upon Clay Helton, especially if they lose the Pac-12 championship game. If not, it might be harder for him to do, but I think enough people are in Lynn Swann's ear, and I think he feels the same way, that he's going to want some changes made on the staff. And, you know, you could argue, like, if you look at a Justin Wilcox, so Clay Helton is a brand new head coach, right? It's his first time. And I like T. Martin a lot. I think he's a great, you know, he's a great coach. He's a great recruiter. But, you know, it was a tough spot for him to be in. He's a rookie offensive coordinator with a rookie head coach. Do you want rookies in those kind of positions. Now, Clancy's more of a seasoned vet at DC, so that makes more sense. But like Justin Wilcox gets, for both of his coordinators, he has to get former, you know, head coaches. They were head coaches the year before, and he brings those guys both in as his coordinators. I think that helps out a rookie head coach a lot more. So I think there's some hires that were familiar for Clay Helton that maybe weren't the best, as far as, you know, could have helped him more. And maybe at this point now, 2 years in, they make some upgrades. I think, you know, Dylan McCullough has been a huge improvement in the running back room. You know, and I think you could do that in the secondary, some other places too. Marcel, I'm not justifying USC's style of play over its 12-game schedule, but how does the College Football Committee justify the SEC's schedule? In addition to getting a bye week, Alabama played a Division II Mercer opponent. Essentially, they have 2 weeks off during the season. How is that fair to USC in the Pac-12? Should the Trojans put Azusa Pacific on their schedule? Marcel, that's all about having how many conference games you have. And I would like that to be more consistent. The SEC only plays 8 conference games. They can play 4 non-conference games, and usually they play like a bye week one in November. The Pac-12 plays 9. A bunch of the other ones play 9 too. But yeah, I think it should be consistent across the board. I would love to see the Pac-12 go to 8. Some people say, hey, that's never going to happen, blah, blah, blah. But I'd rather see, and I don't think you should play like, you know, Azusa Pacific, but give yourself some more options as far as scheduling. Just when the Pac-12 beats itself up, 9 games and a conference championship game, that's tough. Like only, I think the Big Ten started doing that this year, but the Pac-12 was the only conference to be doing that before. Let's see, Don, after a disappointing performance, quote, that's just USC, get used to it. Are we really saying, quote, that's Clay Helton's coaching, just get used to it? I've noticed Scott Wolf is consistently negative in all his USC reporting. Is that some past history between Scott and USC that would explain his negative reporting on USC football? Okay, so the first part, I mean, I think Dan's been pointing out, this is the way USC is. Like, this is how this team is. Now, at least the result is good at the end. Usually they win. But they're going to make mistakes like that. They're going to screw up. That's just kind of the culture, the way this USC team is, and I think it's coming from the coaches and all that. So that's why I think there might be some, or should be some, changes made. And as far as Scott Wolf, yeah, I've known Scott for a long time. He went to USC. He's a USC alum. I mean, that's his style. Like that's how he reports on things. I think you get a lot of people that you have to get your niche, and that's Scott's niche. You know, he's the way he is. But I don't think there's anything, I don't think it's something that USC did. I think whoever he covered, that's the way he would cover the team. But he's very familiar with USC. That's where he went. Okay, we got another one from Gio in Charleston. It seems like Clay Helton is more like Larry Coker than John McKay or Pete Carroll. For me, sports has always been a great metaphor for business. Everyone wants to be successful, but few leaders actually have the standards and the discipline necessary to enforce the standards to become exceptional. Very few leaders have the driver skill set to drive an organization to excellence and the relentless nature to maintain that focus. Unfortunately, Clay Helton is a mature fellow who is not going to change. His personality is well ingrained into his personality. His personality is ingrained into his personality. He is perfectly acceptable coach for a program which embraces an occasional 10-win season. I don't think that I am alone in my thinking, and that many of the supporters deeply hope that is not what USC finds acceptable. This morning, I'm not sure what AD, Athletic Director Lynn Swann, finds acceptable. In a way, a lack of commentary could be taken as a approval of what we are seeing on the field. In my perfect world, AD would apply pressure to the coaching staff by publicly sharing that passion, discipline, focus, and exceptionalism of the core of Trojan football. Anything less is not on strategy or acceptable. There's a saying on Wall Street, the market can take good news and the market can take bad news. No news makes it crazy. Fight on. Thanks for allowing me to vent. By the way, last night my daughter told me she worked with your daughter at Yahoo years ago and she was terrific and talented. She also said you were pretty great yourself. Gio from Charleston. I don't think she worked with my daughter since I don't have a daughter, Gio, but she might maybe work with my wife. My wife worked at Yahoo, so that could have been it. And Lynn Swann, I think, was pretty clear. USC won the Rose Bowl last year, and his I think it was like his Trojan football update, the email out. He was pretty clear that that's not what this team's about. It's about winning championships. So I think Lynn Swann's been, I think there's some criticism for sure, and a lot's going to depend on USC winning that game next Friday in Santa Clara. Trojan Rick sent a text message. He said, "Hey, Ryan, this question's for you, for anyone willing to give an honest, straightforward answer to us diehards. Is there not a better option than Jack Jones or Biggie Marshall? If Clancy's dead set on playing these guys, why not go zone? It's obvious to anyone watching the games this year. Man is not working. Why is there so much focus on T. Martin/Tyson Helton, but no spotlight on Clancy's questionable decision-making? Thank you, Trojan Rick." Okay, so Clancy is Clancy. He's going to do his thing, and he's going to play the guys that are the best. And I think those guys are the best at corner. They've had a bunch of guys hurt. There's just not a lot of options at corner. I think they're the most talented guys, so those are the guys are going to play. But that's the way he plays. I think I'm going to do some numbers. I think USC has their corners on islands much more than most others. So a lot of other teams do play more zone. They're playing things to kind of protect corners. That's not Clancy's mentality. It's definitely more of an NFL mentality. Like, here's the scheme we're using, and you're expecting those guys to do their job. And unfortunately, they have not on a lot of occasions. Thanks for that text, George and Rick. We got a text from DJ. Question for the podcast. Why is USC one of the most penalized teams in the nation? The notorious Pac-12 officials or Helton and company? I think a little bit of both. Pac-12 officials call a lot of penalties. A lot of the Pac-12 teams are in the, the top whatever, or bottom 20 of penalties. But yeah, USC, there's a lot of it that's self-inflicted too that you have to kind of fix, and it hasn't been fixed yet. Jim B, hey guys, love the program. Keep up the great work. Rojo said, quote, "We beat UCLA in my freshman and sophomore years, and I expect to beat them in my junior and senior years." That's a paraphrase, and I hope I'm getting the statement right. Are we to come to any conclusions from that statement? Like, maybe he's staying, that he's coming back for a senior year. Fight on, Jim B. Jim, I would not put any credence into any of that. No, I don't think he said that and think he's coming back. My guess is, and he was very frustrated after the UCLA game, that would make him not want to come back even more. Fernando in Anaheim. Long-time listener, first time writing in. Well, thank you for writing in, Fernando. I just listened to the playoff podcast you did solo and wanted to say this. This is the year USC should want chaos and to make the playoff. There's no one dominating team in the 2017, in my opinion. Oklahoma to me looks like the clear-cut favorite. And they played a conference where they look like they play 7-on-7 every game. But after that, there's a lot of parity. Bama, they've been hit by the injury bug on defense, and Hurts hasn't taken that next step as a passer. Miami, they played down to teams and played tight games with the likes of UNC, Georgia Tech. Even Toledo gave them a scare. Only solid win is against Notre Dame, who Dan doesn't think is very good. Well, USC got smothered by that team. So you're talking about USC got crushed by a team that Miami beat pretty good. So I would say, not that the transitive property always works, but that's stuff I've seen on the field. Clemson, not the same team on offense without Watson. Defense is still solid. USC's goal every season should be to win the Pac-12 and compete for a national title if that's where they rank at the end of the year. Secondary, New Year's Six bowls are nice, but national titles are better. Fernando and Anaheim. No one's going to argue that national titles are not better. I would contend, and that's what I've said, and I'll say it again, that this is not a national title contending team. Could they, they could, but I just feel they'd be better off to make a New Year's Six Bowl. Now, if USC gets stuck playing like an Ohio State in the Fiesta Bowl, in that case, that's not, I'd rather play Ohio State than Bama this year. But with Bama, it's like, you're like, oh, they've got injuries, blah, blah, blah. Well, have they lost? No. Like, I don't think they're going to lose. I kind of think Bama's going to win the title this year. We'll see. But I don't think it would go well for USC playing Alabama in the playoff. I don't think it'll go that well playing Ohio State either, even though that team's got a couple losses. But, that's a tough one in the Fiesta Bowl. I'd rather, USC get someone a little bit more manageable in the Fiesta Bowl. But that's closer to being in a playoff in that case. Lamar said, "Hello, Georgia fans. Unlike pro football, college football has not and probably can't make parity happen. Pro Football uses a draft that college football teams can sign all or as many of the best players as possible, i.e. Alabama. In the past, we've seen the talent shift throughout the regions, and some regions either utilize the talent to match the system they run or wait for player development in that area of concern. Currently, the South has all of the beef on the lines, and the kids usually stay home. What do you think can be done to create parity for the game, if anything? And how was Pete able to get the kids to come west? Lamar. Well, I think we talked about this with Gerard a lot, Martinez, our national recruiting analyst, that, yeah, like there's better quarterbacks in California, you know? So if you get a guy, a quarterback in Florida, maybe you have to develop him a little bit more. Not everybody, but, you know, just a lot of cases. You're finding guys like a Chad Wheeler just got his first start in the NFL. I mean, I covered him when he was in high school. He was 255 pounds playing defensive end and offensive tackle. And, you know, he developed into a good tackle on the offensive side. And, you know, he's playing in the NFL. So sometimes it's about scouting and development as opposed to not as many 305-pound dudes that can run a 4.65 grow on trees out here where they do more in the South. So it's about being able to identify guys. You've seen like a Malik Dorton adjust. You've seen Christian Rector. You know, he was a, you know, 250-pound kid or something in high school or less than that and develop into a, you know, a really effective defensive end for USC. So I think it's not just about getting kids out of certain regions. It's about developing the kids that you can get and knowing that you have to do that and not expecting to find dudes that are 6'5", you know, 295 and run like the wind in Southern California. So you get a Rasheem Green, he's kind of rare, and you got to make sure he's a priority, and USC got him, you know, so he's been really good for USC. But you don't see as many Rasheem Greens here as you do in the South, I would say. And as far as creating parity, there's no organization that's trying to create that. I think the Pac-12 tries to create that among its teams, which is a detriment to teams like USC and Washington because they're the teams at the top and they're trying to make the playoff and they schedule you so it's like everyone's got an equal chance, which isn't what the SEC does. Like the SEC is not going to try to put any roadblocks between Alabama making the college football playoff. They're just not going to do it because that's the bell cow team. And the Pac-12 does the exact opposite. Like they'll put Washington on the road on a Friday night. They'll put USC on the road Friday night, short week following a road game. Not saying like, you know, the SEC would obviously never do that, but if anything kind of came close to that, they're going to give Alabama the benefit of the doubt. They're not going to like try to hurt Alabama's chances of making the playoff if it's the obvious team that's going to make it. So I think for USC and Washington and some of the big schools in the Pac-12, they're fighting an uphill battle with that. So I think the Pac-12 is trying to create parity. I don't think you can create parity overall in college football. Matt F. says, of all the freshmen that are getting playing time, is there one particular that seems to have greatly improved over the course of the season? Ooh. So if you're talking like true freshmen, I mean, like my favorite freshman I mentioned is Tyler Vaughns always. He's been, you know, but I think he's been good from the beginning. They just didn't play him as much. I don't know about he's improved, but he's improved as far as like run after the catch. I didn't expect him to be as good as that, where he can break tackles and stiff arm guys and keep going. I know he's great at high pointing the ball and making catches, and that's what I want to see out of my receivers. I think Andrew Voorhees, like the fact that he's had to start so much, and I think he's playing pretty well along the offensive line. I think, you know, it's a true freshman there. I like what Marlon Tuipulotu was doing, but he got hurt and he's out for the season. And Stephen Carr got hurt a lot too, but probably Voorhees, just like he was kind of thrown into that role, and I think he's done a really good job. We got one last one. Steve in Seattle. Guys, what are they saying in the locker room at halftime? Is Helton too nice and Clancy bringing his deed down by saying they're carrying the load so the offense can pull it out? It's every game this year. Third quarter fail. Steve in Seattle. Okay, so yeah, the third quarter thing, I don't know what they're saying at the halftime, but it doesn't seem to be working. USC's really bad, really, really bad in the third quarter. So I don't know why that is. And it's hard, you know, that's something that you need to address and change, but they've just really, really not been good in the third quarter. And I'm not... It's really hard to say why. We just don't know. And I've asked guys about like what they say. And, you know, I think someone mentioned like maybe scripting plays to start the, you know, after you start the game, do the same kind of thing in the second half. Maybe that's something that would work too, but it's just not flowing right. And I think it starts at the top, and you get the coaches have to realize that. And like, you have to admit it's a problem and do something different to change, not just like, well, we like what we do, so we'll just try to make it work. And I think that's more what they're doing as opposed to doing something different, if that makes any sense. All right. Woo. So we went an hour solo podcast. A lot of talking for me early in this week of Thanksgiving. But I hope you guys enjoyed it. I hope you guys have a great Thanksgiving. I'm sorry again. Keely couldn't join us. I kind of got ready. We're going to do a live show with Chris Trevino, which probably have already happened by the time you get this. But you can see that on USAFootball.com as well. Chris and I will be talking for another hour, kind of talking and answer your questions and talking about what's going on. But I hope you guys enjoyed this edition of the Parastyle Podcast. I think we're going to try to do a recruiting podcast this week, maybe Wednesday as well. But this will be our last kind of team podcast. It's a bye week, so we'll kind of rest on that. We did our best to answer all the questions you guys have sent in, talk about it, and hope you guys enjoyed it. This is the Parastyle Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Abraham, and we will talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Parastyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.